This is BSD.
Hello, I'm Gianluca Baroni.
And I'm Chris Stevenson.
And welcome to the Media Weekly podcast from PhD. On the show, we and some very special guests break down the week's media agenda, making some leaps into what it all means for communications and marketing. How are you, Chris? Welcome back from Cannes. How was it?
Thank you. It's very good to be back. There is only so much rosé a man can consume. back from a very busy, hardworking, but really interesting and stimulating week in Cannes. We were very lucky enough to be there in person and party to some of those great conversations. And for a lot of the network, for all the network, they could join in with our coverage across the course of the week as well, as could some of our clients. So some really good, interesting coverage from Cannes. Last week from Omnicom via Candid Cannes, our daily TV show, and loads more besides. So yeah, it was really good. It was a great week.
There's just so much to celebrate over, isn't there, both from an Omnicom and a PhD perspective, right?
Yeah, that's the good news from us. So Omnicom got Creative Company of the Year, which was brilliant for Omnicom to get that. And PhD played no small part in contributing towards that. So a big well done and congratulations to everyone at PhD for their rewards and awards last week, and to everyone at Omnicom. And our big Omnicom family for that award as well. It's amazing to be part of that.
Absolutely. A huge congratulations all round. So, Chris, what's coming up on this week's episode?
Yeah, coming up this week is my chat with Luke Southern. He's the CEO of Drum. Like me, he's just back from Cannes, and he did an extra special amount of work. He was on the jury for the Entertainment for Music Lions. So this week, he'll be taking us through his highlights and favorite campaigns of the week. And he'll also be talking to us about the panel he chaired, which was called For the Win, which explored a really awesome brand partnership between Cupra, Xbox and Forza Horizon. So Luke's take on judging, the music lines, entertainment music lines, and some really cool partnerships. Stay tuned for all of that in the first of a two-parter with Luke Southern.
Can't wait to get into it. That's all coming up here on the Media Weekly. But before we get into that, it's over to Angela Rapley for the Media Weekly News.
Thanks, Gianluca. First up, last week in Cannes, Omnicom unveiled OmniAssist, its generative AI capability, which has been enabled by a first-of-its-kind partnership with Microsoft. Omnicom is the first agency holding company to have enterprise access to the latest OpenAI GPT models. Revealed during an event celebrating Omni's fifth anniversary, OmniAssist is part of the launch of Omnicom's proprietary platform, Omni 3.0, where every experience is powered by generative AI. In a nutshell, OmniAssist is a virtual assistant providing insights, notifications, and recommendations across every step of Omni's operating system, from audience development to planning, activation, measurement, and optimization. The new capability is expected to reduce research and discovery from days to minutes, with the ability to enhance comms across agency and client teams, accelerating the timeline from insights to client outcomes. AI technology and techniques, including computer vision, language modeling, and facial recognition, have been core to Omni's capabilities since its launch in 2018. It was hailed as the industry's first people-based precision marketing and insights platform, distinguished in the marketplace by its open architecture and wide collection of data partners. So, happy birthday, Omni, and congratulations on the launch of OmniAssist. Another announcement made at Cannes came from NBC Universal, which is taking its One platform global in partnership with Comcast sibling FreeWheel. This will allow marketers to manage global linear and connected TV campaigns in a single buy across markets in Europe, Asia, Australia, and the Americas for the very first time. The move is designed to give One platform the power to enable marketers to connect with a wider range of audiences through access to a unified supply of addressable TV and premium digital video inventory from over 100 leading broadcasters, 1,000 digital publishers, and more than 50 demand-side platforms. The expansion covers content from more than 190 countries, with launch partners that include Sky Media in the UK, Seven West Media in Australia, and Tokyo Broadcast System in Japan, as well as our own Omnicom Media Group. What this means is that the platform's global footprint will help publishers compete more effectively for pan-regional and global budgets, but also better at the local level. While global marketers often manage their brand's marketing globally, media planning and buying has tended to be largely a local and regional exercise because of the fragmentation of media markets globally. But all that is changing, NBC Universal said. And of course, we'll keep you posted on these developments over the coming weeks and months. Next up, TikTok is upping the ante in the e-commerce space as it's confirmed it's testing a new in-app Trendy Beach shopping section, offering products for sale that are shipped and sold by a subsidiary of its parent company ByteDance. The feature, first reported in the Financial Times last week, is currently being tested in the UK. The shopping section offers popular items that have appeared in trending videos, everything from the latest fashions to those tools used to extract earwax, which you'll undoubtedly have seen in your feed. Although the new Trendy Beat feature isn't being tested in the US just yet, it might in the future. TikTok filed a trademark application in the US for Trendy Beat last month, which indicates that the test feature could eventually expand to the US, with a trademark application listing items such as dresses, scarves, hats, footwear, and so on. Commerce was also a big topic at Cannes, with Omnicom last week announcing the launch of OmniCommerce, the industry's first connected commerce orchestration solution. The platform is an ecosystem of tools, technology, data, and partnerships that enables always-on insight, activation, optimization, and attribution across the entire commerce landscape. The aim being to break down the silos between commerce and brand investment to help marketers make better decisions. It's all powered by data from Omnicom's portfolio of retail media network partners, including Albertsons, Amazon, and US giant Walmart, and data vendors, providing a single, standardized, customizable view of the commerce journey, not only across commerce and brand investment, but also across retailers and online-offline environments as well. So, lots of exciting news in the commerce space, and we'll of course keep you up to date with all developments here on Media Weekly. And finally, the AI train just does not stop, with YouTube announcing that it's currently testing a new tool that will help creators automatically dub their videos into other languages using AI. Announcing the new tool last week at VidCon, YouTube has teamed up with AI-powered dubbing service Aloud. Earlier this year, YouTube announced support for multi-language audio tracks, which allows creators to add dubbing to their new and existing videos, letting them reach a wider international audience. As of this month, creators have dubbed more than 10,000 videos in over 70 languages, the company told TechCrunch. Previously, creators had to partner directly with third-party dubbing providers to create their audio tracks, which can be a very time-consuming and expensive process. Aloud, however, lets them dub videos at no additional cost, which can only be a good thing and no doubt will be welcomed by the creator community. So that's it for this week's Media Weekly. I'll now hand you back to Chris and Gianluca.
Thanks, Angela, for the news and another non-stop Media Week. What do you make of that, Chris? I think I, for one, am very excited about the launch of the AI-powered Omni Assist and using that in my day job. I think the ability to reduce research and discovery from days to minutes really means that I'll be able to just create really effective base plans really quickly, but also elevate them with more creativity and rich insights faster as well, which is just fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, that's exactly right. I mean, Omni Assist was one of a whole range of announcements and launches that Omnicom made last week over the course of Cannes week. And yeah, and like you say, Omni Assist is a generative AI capability. It's enabled by Omnicom's partnership with Microsoft. In fact, we're the first agency holding company to have that enterprise access to the latest open AI GPT models. And so we've turned that access into some really interesting and really groundbreaking tools that deliver on the promise. And everyone across Omnicom, including PhD, of course, have got access to Omni Assist. So harder, faster, better, stronger, baby. So it's going to be great.
Absolutely. And then another key theme that dominated headlines was obviously commerce and that TikTok Trendy Beat news, you know, that shoppable section of trending items. I think that's really interesting because I think it signals a broader interest in breaking down the silos between brand advertising, content, and commerce, and just taking advantage of the best of all those worlds, right?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think it's how you leverage those and how marketers can really be taking the really quite developed and advanced capabilities that exist now to drive outcomes. And alongside OmniAssist, Omnicom also announced OmniCommerce, which is one of the industry's first connected commerce orchestration solutions, which is really about how we can use the Omni platform to help drive commerce-based marketing outcomes and really sometimes quite complex marketing challenges, how we can drive outcomes for that for marketers. So really interesting to see just the commerce continue to play out. But what was interesting, I guess, from Cannes' perspective is how integrated it's now become. I think last year there was definitely a sense that commerce was shiny, a lot of hard edges. You really saw Cannes this year, the extent to which it's now been integrated, bedded, incorporated, and baked into a whole load of solutions. So some really interesting work and really commendable work, you know, from across the industry and from Omnicom and its agencies for that over the last 12 months.
Absolutely. Some really exciting opportunities coming up in the commerce space. And as ever, lots to say across, much to discuss. And as always, we want you to be part of the conversation. If you have any questions, thoughts, and opinions on this week's news or anything that's shaping your media week, please do get in touch with us. You can reach us by email at maketheleap@phdmedia.com. That's maketheleap@phdmedia.com.
Yeah, please do get in touch. We love to hear your comments. Right, coming up next, I speak to Drum CEO Luke Southern. We'll be right back after this.
Today, creating a media campaign requires a diverse range of experts from different organizations and different locations. Providing a shared online environment where they can build a campaign is now a necessity. Omni Studio brings everyone together into one campaign planning platform. Marketers can explore existing media campaigns, create new ones, and collaborate in their development. Change how you plan your marketing with Omni Studio from PhD Media, the only collaborative campaign planning platform of its kind. Omni Studio, creating remarkable campaigns, creating remarkable growth. Check out phdmedia.com to find out more.
Joining us once again on the Media Weekly is CEO of Drum, Luke Southern. Luke, brilliant to have you back on the podcast.
Thanks, Chris. Delighted to be here.
Great to have you back. You arrived back in one piece, I see, from Cannes. Before we get into it, how was the festival? All roles laid out? Did you have a good week?
Yeah, well, you know, as you well know, it's you do a lot of miles. You cover a lot of ground at the festival. I probably lost count of the number of steps I did on a daily basis, traversing the Croisette from one meeting to another, or one client engagement to another. But yeah, you know what? Overall, it was an excellent year. And I think, you know, for anybody that's been following the press, I think we'll probably agree that it was a fantastic year, both in terms of the work that no doubt we're going to talk about, but also in terms of announcements, certainly from an Omnicom perspective. Yeah. You know, particularly strong and very enjoyable too.
Yeah, it's a big year, loads of stuff that we'll get into from an Omnicom perspective. But first, you were there for a very specific reason. You were had the prestigious role of being a judge on the Entertainment for Music category. So some people might not be aware of that as a category. Tell us a bit about the category, what you did and the process you went through.
Of course, I'm very happy to. So, I mean, I think, you know, regardless of the jury you're on, the first thing to say is it is, and it might sound cliche, but it's absolutely true. I make no apologies for saying this. It is a real privilege to be part of a jury at Cannes Lions. And you really do get an incredible insight into just A, how seriously the awarding process is taken, and B, just how good the work needs to be in order to not only get shortlisted, but then, of course, win a medal, whether that's, you know, bronze right through to the Grand Prix. And having judged previously at Cannes, the general entertainment category, about 5 years ago, I already knew what to expect. You're going to spend a lot of time together with a small group of people. You're going to form pretty close bonds, and, you know, you're not going to see sunshine for a few days.
And how many are you? How many are in the room?
Yeah, 10 of us on this jury, yeah. which feels like a decent size, actually. But in answer to your question, so Entertainment for Music was broken out of the main entertainment category, I want to say 6 or 7 years ago, And what makes it different is, you know, per the title, really, it's really focused in on music, both in terms of things like original compositions, how music has enhanced the campaign, perhaps brand partnerships with musical talent, and of course, like most categories, innovation through music. So thinking about Web3 and generative AI and those kind of areas. But it's quite unique at Cannes in that it is the only Lion category that awards two Grand Prix. And the reason it rewards two Grand Prix is because one is dished out for outstanding production or kind of creative achievement in music videos, so no brands attached to it, and then the other one for brand work. And I think that, to me and the other jurors, gave us an extra sense of responsibility, really, for making sure that the work we chose to elevate to the top was both powerful in terms of its impact, but purposeful. And I don't mean purpose as in purpose-led, but actually having a reason for existing in the brand category.
And talk us through some of the work that made it to the top and that the people in that room wanted to recognise and give the most prestigious awards to.
Yeah, well, actually, just before we get to that, I just to go back to the point, really, around the process, you know, you spend a good 2 to 3 days locked together in a room. And to give you an insight, pre-judging, which you do before the event, for me this year took about 60 hours. So it's quite a big commitment. 400 cases, more or less, to watch in pre-judging, which, and this is a smaller category. In some of the categories, you're going to the thousands. When you get to the festival, you've already got a long shortlist, which for us was about 60 different cases. And then the first part of judging, you whittle that down to a general shortlist, in this case, 49 or so, which I think is about 12-13% of total entries. And then when you award the medals, that's only really about 4% of the total entries, and for Grand Prix, you know, 0.5. So it really does underline just how standout the work has to be in the first instance.
And you award bronzes, silvers and golds.
Correct.
And then one of the golds is then chosen to be, if there is one, if the jury agrees there is a Grand Prix, it's selected from the golds, right?
Correct, yeah. So you have to go gold and then elevate it up to Grand Prix. Yeah. We obviously do that twice. But, you know, we were very fortunate to have a really broad mix of jurors. So from, gosh, a native Australian Aboriginal rapper called Nookie, who has created a foundation to raise representation profile of native Aboriginal people in Australia on one side of the fence, right through to our jury president, who owns a sort of art, well, director representation business and music video production company called Doomsday, that has produced music videos for pretty much everybody you can name in the music industry over the last 20 or so years. So a real range of experience. And I think, for me, this process definitely taught me was to not go with a preconceived idea of what you think is going to win. You have to go into that room and be open to having your mind changed and be open to different perspectives. It sounds obvious and it's something we should probably do on a daily basis, but as we all know, in the day-to-day of work, sometimes, you know, in an effort to get stuff done quickly, you don't often keep your mind open. And one of the best elements of the whole experience is getting the opportunity to get deeply passionate about the work. You know, there were sort of stand on soapbox moments for everybody in the room to get really passionate behind a piece of work that they had nothing to do with, but just because they believed it, and hearing different perspectives, you know, really, really made a difference.
Yeah, I was going to say from my experience that is the element of judging that you do find so incredibly rewarding when you become an advocate and you become a fan of a piece of work and you really want to represent that in the room.
Absolutely. And so to the work itself and to the stuff that rose to the top, we gave ourselves a criteria, really, for how we should assess, you know, what constitutes great. Because when you get there with a long shortlist, you already know that the work you've got is the best of the best. So our criteria was, is the work purposeful, as already mentioned? You know, does it really have a reason for being? Does it make you feel? Because, you know, if music-led stuff doesn't make you feel something, you know, whether that's compassion or happiness or sadness or whatever, then it's not really taking effect. And most importantly, is it moving culture and creativity forward? And I think that felt like a really good bellwether, a really good barometer, rather, for, you know, is it the right piece of work to award or not?
What made it to the top? What got them out?
As I said, lucky enough to award two Grand Prix. So from a brand perspective, Apple's campaign, The Greatest, was the unanimous winner when it came to the Grand Prix.
And that Chili was going in as a favourite, right?
Yeah, I think so. But, you know, people kept their cards close to their chest, so to speak. Mm. And no one sort of, you know, over the 2 days before we got to that stage of the process said, I'm just going to call it now and this is my favourite. Because I think you need to respect the process.
100%.
But, you know, that campaign delivers on so many levels. For anybody that hasn't watched it, I would encourage you to do so. It's a 3.5-minute film. It is essentially a product demo for Apple's or iPhone's accessibility features, but told through the stories and personal experiences of people, you know, with a variety of different disabilities or, you know, different kind of, you know, elements of neurodiversity. And what is great about this campaign is not only is it set to the soundtrack of a track that was created using a Muhammad Ali quote, who obviously himself has Parkinson's disease and, you know, very famously has spoken a lot about it, but his famous quote, I'm the greatest, you then see the accessibility features play out in order to, in effect, create the music that sits as the bed for the track. And I think, you know, against all of our criteria, does it make you feel, you know, is it purposeful and is it moving culture on? Absolutely, hands down winner. On the music video side of things, we awarded the Grand Prix to Michael Kiwanuka for his music video for his song Beautiful Life. Again, a very, very powerful film, which is really about shining a light and telling a story, I guess from a social action perspective, about the ease of availability to guns in the US and, you know, perhaps challenging without being direct, you know, the kind of slightly more liberal gun laws there are in America, but done in a beautifully crafted, quite harrowing way, but equally as impactful as the brand Grand Prix. And then when it came to other work, you know, the stuff that rose to the top was really stuff that was moving things forward. So Rosalia, the Spanish artist who was absolutely, you know, cleaned up in terms of TikTok and social channels, she was awarded gold for the launch of her album, Molten Money, I can never say it correctly, which basically used TikTok's creative functionality to launch the album over 30 minutes of a TikTok live experience, which also, you know, got you to kind of move your phone around, interact with it in different ways. And what I love about the campaign is you ended up with a kind of music video for the album, in effect. But then those video clips were then used at her live shows, which people are then filming, and then they're posting them on social channels. There's a really nice circularity to almost content created for TikTok audiences or social audiences, which is then propagated again by those audiences. It's almost like a masterclass in how to use bring users and talent or audiences and talent together to almost feel like they have a sense of ownership of that artist's material, but also co-create with them. So that was excellent. Some brilliant work for Gorillaz with some of the kind of meta kind of music concerts that they did in Times Square. And then some brilliant work in terms of driving new music discovery from Spotify. Gosh, what else? Oh my God, there are so many great examples. I mean, more than you can kind of care to remember, but I think maybe, you know, we can post the full list of the golds and the silvers and the bronze.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what's really interesting about the cases you've highlighted is it shows artists not just at the top of their game when it comes to the music craft, but also demonstrating real craft in terms of media and how their content is consumed. And it seems that a lot of the work that you awarded Metal this year really demonstrated that craft of the contemporary communications marketplace, not just craft of music.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Chris. I think it's the stuff that stands out is about, you know, a new way to launch an album, a new way to embrace technology, to use media not just as a distribution channel but as a creative canvas, and that was key.
And that would have been enough, I suppose, to keep you busy. But also, alongside OMG, Cupra, and Yahoo, Drum also held a panel at the festival called For the Win. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, that's right. So we've been working for probably the last 18 months or so with Cupra, which, if you don't know, is a disruptive new brand, actually, in the Volkswagen portfolio. It's only been around for about 5 years. And, you know, they have an enviable lineup of performance EVs as well as, you know, petrol-powered engine cars as well, Formentor, the Tavascan. We did the talk with Yahoo and Patrick Sievers, who's the global head of brand experience at Cupra. on the Yahoo Beach on the Monday for the win, you know, using gaming parlance, because actually what we were talking about was the brand integration that collectively we'd all worked on for Cupra into Forza Horizon 5, which, again, if you don't know, is one of the biggest gaming franchises out there. And actually for less established automotive brands, often quite difficult to get the cars into the game. You know, you obviously want your car in a game like that because you want people to be able to try before they buy, if you will, and almost do a virtual test drive. So it was through that lens that we had an open conversation around how do you build your brand into gaming franchises and gaming spaces and virtual worlds in an authentic way. And my role was very much to moderate the session and ask the questions to Patrick and Josh Partridge, who's the VP of EMEA at Yahoo, who also manage ad sales on the Xbox platform, hence the connection. So it's really a three-way collaboration that made this possible. The actual campaign itself isn't finished yet, otherwise it would have been entered into Cannes Lions, into the new gaming category that launched this year.
One for next year.
Yeah, absolutely right. But I think the general point was, you know, it was a real masterclass in how to put brands into games in an authentic and original way.
I mean, it sounds like a fascinating campaign and definitely one for next year. What were some of the key takeouts from the discussion?
Yeah, I think first of all, it's that, you know, a lot of these campaigns that you review in Cannes, whether you're in the jury or whether you watch them afterwards, it's evident that it doesn't just take one party. To make a campaign like this work, you know, it needed Cooper's full backing. It needed our involvement at Drum, very much heavily relying on the PhD team as well, because you're using media as a creative channel to get a brand into a gaming franchise that doesn't necessarily always take new brands, you know, unless they become well-established. And obviously working very closely with the game developers to make sure that the models of the car like are authentic and truly representative, both in terms of how they look, but also how they drive. So I think key takeouts were collaboration is key when you're doing partnerships like this. Obviously, when brands show up in gaming spaces, they have to be really respectful of the intellectual property. You know, gamers can be quite cynical, rightly so, because while they don't unlike brands or not like brands, they treat them with a certain sense of trepidation. You know, you've got to come in and respect the IP that people spend hours and hours of their time. And I think the third thing is just the size and scale of gaming audiences. You know, gaming as a entertainment vertical is bigger than is bigger than music and film combined. And about 40% of the world are gaming. And when you kind of look through the lens of Gen Z and potential future drivers for an automotive brand, you know, I think they're spending more time in gaming spaces in general than they are in social spaces. So, you know, I look at gaming, and one of the key takeouts for me from this panel, very much through the lens of, it's both a media channel to reach audiences, but it's also a marketing channel in that it creates new or gives you new creative canvases to play with as a brand.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think that the other thing which I think, I often say it goes without saying, but I'm not sure it does, is that the one thing that in gaming, it is what you fundamentally can't do is use any kind of ad interruption. The one thing that gamers are sensitive to isn't brands, it isn't companies or perspectives adding value to that game. That they're fundamentally not comfortable with any kind of interruption just because of the nature of gaming. I think you've got to come to gaming with that sense of how you value create, how you are additive to the experience.
Completely right.
And any remnant of an ad interruptive mindset, it is just, you're not going to get past go.
Yeah, completely agree. And I think, you know, you can see that's why there's the rise of a lot of startup ad tech businesses in the gaming space. There's a company called AudioMob that I know pretty well, who actually place audio ads into social and mobile games. And, you know, their view on the world is it's less interruptive because we're used to kind of listening to stuff. Well, it doesn't stop the game, but actually the piece of communication goes into your mind, of course. But yes, from Cooper's perspective, they were very clear with us that going into Forza Horizon 5, it wasn't just about providing the cars, but actually it needed ancillary benefits and value for the gamers. So, you know, bespoke tracks, challenges, all of these things that become additive to the overall enjoyment of the game, you know, facilitated via a brand. And I think that's where you get the magic.
And that's it for this episode of the Media Weekly from PhD. Remember, you can get in touch with any feedback or questions for the team here at the Media Weekly by emailing us at maketheleap@phdmedia.com. A big thank you to Luke and to you for listening. To find out more about PhD and what we do, just head to phdmedia.com.
And finally, make sure you do subscribe to the Media Weekly wherever you get your podcasts. You don't want to miss a single one. Until then, enjoy making some media leaps in the week ahead, wherever and whenever you are in the world.
Bye for now.
Bye, everyone.